recorded live in the Phantasmo Lounge, high atop the DeMarco building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia. It's Phantasmo After Dark, with your host, Rob Floyd. Tonight's topic, the Corpse Grinders. Well, hey everybody, welcome to the lounge. It's just me and you this evening, or you and I this evening, all alone up here, which is okay. Because I don't know too many other people I could convince to watch this movie that we're talking about tonight. You know, if you like grindhouse movies like I do, bizarre, weird, strange, sometimes tough to watch movies from that great grindhouse era of the 60s and the 70s, you know, you talk about Dave Friedman, you talk about Doris Wishman, Herschel Gordon Lewis, you can't help but to talk about Ted V. Michaels also. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about tonight. Specifically, his masterpiece, so to speak, The Corpse Grinders. Now, a lot of people, when you talk about Ted Michaels, or Ted V. Michaels, I should say, one of the first things that comes to mind is Astro Zombies, which is one of his earlier films. I believe that was the late 60s. And I think that one of the reasons that sticks with people, well, I know a couple of reasons that sticks with people is Tora Sutana was in that, which is a striking, iconic woman. And he had the look of the Astro Zombies. He had this iconic image of the Astro Zombies themselves. The mask is kind of an image that sticks out and stands with you. Corpse Grinders really didn't have anything like that going for it. But I do believe it was his most successful film. To hear him tell it, and by all accounts, it was made for the paltry sum of about $47,000, give or take, and it made over $10 million. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot by today's standards, but if you figure ticket prices when this came out, 71 or so, were probably anywhere from 50 cents to $1.50, maybe $2. So you're making $10 million, and this thing wasn't, yeah, there weren't as many movie screens for this to be shown on back then like today. So you're making $10 million at anywhere from 50 cents to $2 a pop on probably half as many screens as movies would be released nowadays. That's not too shabby. The movie itself isn't really that bad either. Now, it's by no means great. and you kind of got to be in the mood to watch it. But the reputation Ted V. Michaels has gotten for a low-budget crap, so to speak, I think really comes from his later movies, because this guy was making movies. He died just, I think, 2 years ago, and he was like 87, and he had just made a movie the year before that, I believe. So he's been making movies from the 60s through, you know, just a couple of years ago, late 2000 or mid-2000s here. It's amazing, this guy, you know, in Hollywood, outside of Hollywood, and able to make movies and, you know, make a pretty decent living at it, I guess. He lived in a castle for a number of years in California, a real honest-to-goodness castle, with a revolving door of women living in the castle with him over the years. Actresses that wanted to be in his movies, that were in his movies, that were friends. Literally, he had pretty much a harem living there with him for most of his life. And he was a character, and by all accounts, just a very good-natured guy, not extremely weird or mean by any stretch of the imagination. Interviews that I've seen with him and other people that have talked to him and interviews with them talking about him, he always comes off as a very likable, down-to-earth guy that really just loved making movies and everything about it. Kind of like a latter-day Ed Wood in a way. But with a little more charm, I guess. Visually, he was a character. He snow white hair with a handlebar waxed mustache and the goatee, and always wore this gold chain with a, I think it was a boar's tusk on it, necklace all the time. He was a very distinctive looking guy. And he loved making movies and made quite a few of them. This one in particular, Corpse Grinders, is very odd and has kind of a plot that would be repeated later in a lot of other movies. But I'm guessing Ted here did it first. It revolves around this cat food factory, Lotus Cat Food, that is gourmet cat food, and their special ingredients just happens to be human flesh. Go figure. And that in and of itself is, you know, is bad enough for a plot, but turns out that the cats that eat this gourmet food develop a taste for human flesh and start attacking their owners and going mad. This doctor and nurse have a run-in with the nurse's cat and decide to do a little investigating. They investigate the cat food factory and get caught up in that. The acting in this film, speaking of the doctor and nurse, they're actually pretty good. They could have been in any other film and done fine. The acting's not bad in this for a low-budget, no-budget film. There's a few people in it, a few of the other characters, so there's a lot of other actors. Use that term loosely in this is the movie. It varies. It goes from the doctor and the nurse being, you know, quite good and could be in any other movie to the guy pushing the broom and cleaning up the cat food factory who is just a bizarre-looking character. And I don't know if he's really acting or if that's the way the guy really is or not. But Ted Michaels said it in one interview I was watching that he saw this guy and the way he looked and said, he's got to be in my movie. Just on that basis alone. And there's a few other people in there like that. There's the Tessie, I guess it's the secretary for the cat food company, who has one leg, hobbles around on a crutch, has this ratty bird's nest, big hair, and speaks in sign language. She's mute and speaks in sign language, which is no sign language on Earth that looks like what they're doing. They're just making it up as they go. They're waving their hands around. It's really kind of funny to watch them do that and pass it off as actual sign language. But the movie itself, I go back and said, it's not bad, really. It's not inept by any stretch. The things that stick, low budget-wise, the things that really stick out, like some of the characters, the acting's a subpar, you know, but most of it's pretty good. Some of the sets, like the hospital set, is mainly you just see the one room that the doctor's in and the hallway outside the door most of the time, and you can tell it's just blank walls that they've stuck cabinets on and tables and stuff to try to make it look like a hospital room. Even some of the walls and some that are blank, like in when the morgue set or whatever, Ted said in an interview where they just took frame and luan and stretched over it so it would look like a wall, like they use on, you know, theater and stages and all, so it would look like a wall to a room. But some of the sets are location. The big gates that they go into, I think for the cemetery, are actually the gates to Ted's castle that he lived in. And the little cemetery where they're digging up the corpses for the cat food, they actually built just inside the gates on his in his yard off to the side. There's a couple of houses that they use. So they have actual location shots. It's not just cheap set stuff, but it goes back and forth. But the movie's not slow, and it constantly moves the story along. And is actually, upon watching it again, it's actually better than I remember it being. But by no means does that make it good either. I keep going back and forth on this because I can't say it's awful, but it's really not one you're going to watch over and over again either. I think kind of the best way to put it, a good friend of ours wrote a book a while back titled There Are No Bad Movies, Just Bad Audiences. That was John Dimes. It's available on Amazon, I believe. You can get it. Look for it. Get it. Read it. Learn it. Love it. Live it. And that kind of goes true for any movie. And this particular, if you're a Ted Michaels fan or a fan of this type of film, you'll probably enjoy it. If you're not, you know, a good audience for this movie, then you just won't enjoy it. The other characters in this, the husband and wife team that digs up the corpses, are bizarre. They're almost like a homeless couple, but they have a house they keep going back to. I think mainly you see them in the kitchen. He's kind of a big Hagrid caveman looking type guy, and she's this older woman who carries around a baby doll and treats it like it's real. And that's her only insane kind of quirk, other than, you know, digging up corpses with her husband to sell for cat food. There's some really odd little things in here too that I didn't really catch, I don't think, the first time around, and that they kind of hint at. There's one point where they're had this young girl they're getting ready to feed into the corpse grinding machine, and one of the owners looks down and says something to the effect of, you know, I hate to waste young flesh like this, alluding to necrophilia a little bit. And his partner's like, what are you talking about? And they kind of dismiss it. But it's little touches of things like that throughout the film that I caught like the second time around watching it that I missed the first time. It's like, a little more going on in this than I thought. Which, you know, brings us to the corpse grinding machine itself, which is, you know, the focal point of the movie, the title of the movie, the draw that gets you to watch the movie. The machine's figured prominently on the poster. And what really drew me to this film, besides the title itself, I mean, who wouldn't go see a film called The Corpse Grinders at a drive-in or, you know, a sleazy theater if you got the chance? But I had heard radio spots for this, and I've actually got a disc, four discs of radio, drive-in radio spots. I don't know what the actual title of the discs are. One of the good friends of the podcast, Brother Craig up in Richmond, was good enough to slide me copies of these discs, and I've listened to them over and over and over and over again. They're beautiful. They're entertaining as hell. They're fun, you know, and great to put on if you're just driving in a car long distance and listen to this stuff. But the Corpse Grinder trailer keeps popping up over and over again on here, and then there's this one section at the end of one of the discs that's just like almost like a night at the drive-in. It's got the drive-in announcer talking before the movies are coming on and all that, and telling you about the food and everything at the concession stand, and then talking about new movies that are coming up to the theater in the coming weeks. And then we've got an interview with the director. It's the director, the producer of this upcoming movie, The Corpse Grinders. And I forget what they say his name is, but it's some goofy made-up name. But then they have this interview where he talks about they found this corpse grinding machine in the prop department of an old Hollywood studio, and it was forbidden and locked away. And now it talks about this history of this machine they found, and they pulled it out and decided to make this movie about this machine. And all this ridiculous, amazing hype over this thing they just made up. You know, and once you see the machine, it's really not that impressive. It's all, you know, it's plywood and dials and bicycle parts and all this stuff over to make it look like this machine, and a conveyor belt, and then these rolling spindles that don't even really look like blades in the opening that you feed the corpse into. Now, one thing about Ted V. Michaels as opposed to Herschel Gordon Lewis is everything that happens in this movie really is in your mind. He doesn't show a lot of blood, if any, really. You never see a corpse being ground up into the machine. You see it slide towards the opening, and then the camera cuts to the backside of the machine, and you see ground up meat coming out of the tube at the end, just like if you're grinding up hamburgers. So you never see the gore, but it's put in your head that that's what's going on. So you fill in the blanks, you know, which is, you know, is always kind of cool when they do that. Because whatever is going on in your head is probably scarier than anything they could show you on film anyway. If I can find anywhere online these that interview, I will try to post a link to it on the Facebook page. I'll definitely post the trailer for this movie, any radio spots I can find, and as many pictures as I can find, of course, on the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page. The hype around this thing was, like I said, what sold me, and I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff and love it. Of course, when the movie came out, one of the things they did with theaters was had people sign waivers at the theater that they were of sound mind and wouldn't sue the theater if they went crazy or died of fright, that type of thing. And Ted Michaels also had a promotion going on with theaters where he challenged or had a contest for each theater to build their own version or their own corpse grinding machine in the lobby before the movie came out or was shown to build publicity and an excitement for people to come see the movie. If I can find pictures of any of those, I'll post those too. That's just amazing. Once in a blue moon, do you ever see anything like that in theaters anymore? Hardly ever, especially with the multiplexes and all. It's hard to do, but how cool would that be to go into a theater and see, you know, this big machine and a sign saying it's a corpse grinding machine and to promote this new movie coming out and coming next week? Hell yeah, I'd want to go see that movie then. I mean, who wouldn't? That's just awesome. Now, this is, it's easily available. I think you can get off Amazon for under $10, easy, whether alone or in a box set of other Ted Michaels movies, which I think I'm going to have to go back and watch some more. I've only seen a couple of his movies. I saw the original Astro Zombies some years ago. It's entertaining enough for, it's black and white 60s movie. Of course, Tura Santana's gorgeous in it. John Carradine's in it, who's always a treat. And it's not a bad little B, you know, black and white sci-fi horror type movie. Then years later, I saw, this had to have been late 90s, early 2000s, Mark of the Astro Zombies, which is horrible. It is so bad and so inept in its filmmaking. It's hard to believe it's from the same guy. The charm of it, it's the original or anything he's done before that, is lost on the way things are shot today. Because it's all shot. See, the original stuff back in the day, it was all shot on film. And film has a certain look to it, and it's forgiving of a lot of things. You can get away visually with more things, with lighting, and with just the way you shoot things, than you can on digital video. Digital video, to me, always looks like a home movie. And by that, I mean it's shot really on just video, just very cheap. It always things are too crisp and too sharp. And I know that sounds kind of weird, and it's hard to explain unless you see it yourself. But it really makes his movies look cheaper than the cheaper, low-budget ones he made in the past. Mark of the Astro Zombies is horrible. The effects are horrible. The story is whatever. The acting, okay. But it just looks really cheap and bad, and like some people just made it with a video camera going out in a parking lot and buildings and stuff. Corpse Grinders, on the other hand, is not shot bad. It's really not. It's the night scenes are night. There's some scenes that are night for day. With filters and things. It's not a masterfully shot film, but it's not bad. And like I said, the acting doesn't throw you. If anything, it gets you to kind of pay attention because it's like, wow, that's really not bad. The acting's pretty good, and most of it, for most of the principal actors, the acting's pretty good. But like I said, Ted liked to use characters in his film, and visually or character traits that he liked in somebody, he would put them in a film. And this one is no exception. Now, he's known for quite a few other films. Titles alone will get you to watch them. The Black Klansman, Astro Zombies, which I mentioned before. The Doll Squad is one of his more popular ones. Blood Orgy of the She-Devils is one that I'm dying to see that I haven't seen yet. Who wouldn't want to see that movie? Blood Orgy of the She-Devils. That is a title that will grab you. Grab me, anyway. But the Corpse Grinders, I'd recommend watching it. I'd say give it a shot, see what you think. Like I said, the plot, basic horror movie plot that's been used over and over again of, she's, you know, grinding up people and putting them into food, whether it was, this one's for pet food. Other ones has been for, you know, feeding humans to humans. I think Herschel Gordon did in Blood Feast, and then, oh God, so many other movies that have done this. There are two sequels to this movie, believe it or not, done 30 or so years later, which, you know, were titled Corpse Grinders 2 and Corpse Grinders 3. Corpse Grinders 2, Ted Michaels did himself, you know, wrote, directed, and that's a little part in, which is basically recycling the same plot. Whereas the two guys in the cat food factory, it's their nephews who are reopening the cat food factory. And I think the doctor and nurse, there's a doctor and nurse that come to investigate them, the same as the original, but he's thrown into the mix alien cat people that come to Earth. Just gonna let that go right there. You can read the rest of the plot yourself. I haven't seen that yet, and I'm kind of dying to, but I'm kind of scared because it was made after, you know, like I said, he went to digital filmmaking. And then there's another one, a Corpse Grinders 3, that he served as executive producer on, that I believe was made by a Spanish company that like kind of bought the rights from him. Which is really bizarre. And I believe those two are available also on Amazon. I think they're in that box set I was talking about. They can probably be got individually. It's amazing to me how, reading up on this, how well this movie did when it first came out. Because it came out in an era where it was just starting to get more blood and gore into films. You know, with Herschel Gordon Lewis and things like that. And there were a lot of other films that were, well, I say were much better that came out. But, you know, with no social media back then and only word of mouth and the way these things played regionally, these movies, really pretty much all you had to go on to find out if you were wanting to go see a movie were the trailers you saw in the theater on TV, radio spots you heard, or the posters you saw in the theaters advertising the movie. You couldn't go and research to find out what it was all about or see 20 different people's reviews or what they thought of the movie like you can now to color your opinion. You just had these few things and make your own, you know, assumption about it or whether you wanted to see the movie or not. Yeah, I'm guessing that's one reason why it did so well, because it was a garish poster, a garish name, and what better thing to go see at a drive-in than a movie called The Corpse Grinders back then. Today, even if it was remade, high, you know, big budget, it would just get lumped in with all the other dozens of horror movies that fall by the wayside, and or the ones that are made go direct to video or and never really see the light of day, or direct to Netflix. There are tons and tons of horror movies that end up on Hulu or Netflix or in the $5 bin at Walmart that are low budget, people throw together and make, and, you know, only a handful of people ever see them, if that many. And back then, though, in the 60s, 70s, even up through the 80s, low budget filmmaking was low budget film making. You, not anybody could just grab a digital camera, or even hell, now on your cell phone, you can make movies with your cell phone now. So anybody and their brother can make a movie now. And with social media, or with just the ease of the software, can put it out on a DVD and sell it. Back then, the only way you could get a movie, your movie scene, was get it to play in a theater. So you had to make a film. You had to film it. You had to edit it. You had to, you know, and I'm talking on film, actual celluloid, not, you know, digital, not all in computers or anything. There's no such thing back then. And then you had to distribute it. You had to find a company to distribute it for you, or you had to try to self-distribute it. Independent theaters, you get it to play regionally on the drive-in circuit or grindhouse circuit if you're lucky. So there was a lot to do to get your film seen back then. It's really amazing how many films did make it to theaters. And if you want proof of that, just look at the Something Weird catalog. Something Weird Video has hundreds of movies of varying quality, and some are okay, some are pretty good, and some are just like, good God, how did this ever get made? But it did get made, and it did play in an actual theater if they have it on DVD. And I just find that fascinating. With the glut of films that come out now, with the varying degrees of high budget, low budget, whatever, it's just so easy to do. Back then, it wasn't. And you really had to do something to make it. It's just amazing, some of the ones that did get made. And that are still out there that you can still see. And I'm a sucker for that. I'll pick up any I can. But Corpse Grinders here, I keep going back to the hype is what sold me on it. And if you've never seen the movie, definitely watch the trailer, listen to the radio spots, look at the poster, and then watch the movie. I can't say I don't think you'll be disappointed. But if you understand and know going in that it's not going to be a big bloodbath of a film, it's an interesting little film, but you got, like I said, you got to be in the right frame of mind, in the right mood to watch it and enjoy it. It's one of those I have watched a couple times over the years, because not a lot of it really stays with me, insofar as I can't remember every single thing that happens in the movie. But I remember, you know, key things that go on and visuals in it. And it, every couple of years, it's like I pull it out and like, okay, I got to watch this again to see if I remember this correctly and sit down with it. And I do see something a little different each time I watch it, I got to say. And I do enjoy it, especially, too, after watching interviews with Ted V. Michaels about the making of it. And I tell you what, the disc that's on Amazon that you can get for under $10, you get the movie, you get, I think there's trailers on it, but you also get a commentary track and an interview with Ted Michaels on here. And the commentary track is kind of cool because it's not super insightful or great, but he talks about during each scene, what was going on in the scene, how they shot it, how they made it, who was in it. But what comes across is his genuine enthusiasm for what he was doing, and his fondness of the memories of doing it at the time. That really comes through, that he's remembering everything that was going on at the time and how good a time he had doing it. And he has nothing bad to say about anybody that was in the film. Everybody he talks about how good a person they were, or how nice they were, or how fun they were to work with. So that was kind of neat to watch that. And I recommend watch the movie, and then if you're still interested in it at all, watch it again with the commentary track on and the little interview after. It's really kind of cool, and it's kind of neat to see there, you know, people out there who have made a living doing what they love doing, good, bad, or indifferent, and did it for a lot of years. I mean, he may have died pretty much penniless, but he lived a good long time and did what he loved doing and did it with his friends and got a lot of other people, you know, gave him a shot to get started in film. So that's pretty awesome. I think that's about all I've got for this one. This is going to be kind of a short one since it's just me and you up here and not really a whole lot more to say about this film. You know, if you're interested at all, go online, do a little research. Ted V. Michaels, fascinating character. I mean, he was a stuntman. He was an archer. He was, you know, a filmmaker, and he did a lot of things. Interesting character. If I can find pictures of his castle, I'll post that too. But definitely give this film a shot. The Corpse Grinders, it's not one of my top 10 favorites, but it's an interesting little kind of footnote to Grindhouse filmmaking. And it's easy to get a copy of it. Definitely check it out. And drop by the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page and look at all the pictures I'll post and drop a comment or two if you feel so inclined, or drop us a line at the email. That's phantasmoad@gmail.com. All one word, phantasmoad@gmail.com. That's about it. Till next time. So, hey, thanks for listening, everybody. Good night.